Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order. We have a presentation, Nova Scotia Innovation Hub. Rod Babcock, who's the Executive Director of Nova Scotia Innovation Hub. We have George Ernst, CFO Freeman Lumber, woodlot owner in Lunenburg County. We have Billy Freeman, also a business development manager for Freeman Lumber. So if you want to approach and start your presentation, that would be great.
All right, good morning, folks. I'm told the mic is fussy. Is working okay? Okay. All right, good morning, folks. Madam Mayor, councilors, really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this morning. What George and I want to talk about is a concept that through the Nova Scotia Innovation Hub we've been working on with some municipalities here in southwestern Nova Scotia around establishing a bioeconomy development opportunity zone. And we understand that, the council has been, considering potential support of the zone. So we hope this is helpful in providing some additional information and context. First off, a little bit about who we are. The Nova Scotia Innovation Hub is a not-for-profit association that fosters the growth of the low-carbon bioeconomy in Nova Scotia. We take a very broad view of the bioeconomy. It's any conversion of a renewable resource like wood fiber, but not only wood fiber, or a waste stream to a higher value product. And when you look across the country at the types of businesses and projects that fit within the bioeconomy, you see a wide range, including folks like Ensign, who are in Ontario and Quebec, that produce a low-carbon biofuel from residual wood fiber produced at sawmills, Cellulose in Windsor, Quebec, who produce a highly innovative nanomaterial from wood fiber, and then as you get closer to home, Masqueoman, based out of Cape Breton, who produce a skin care product based on birch bark oil. And then even closer to home in your backyard, Sustain Technologies, based out of Kaiser Meadows landfill, that breaks down municipal solid waste into a range of energy and recycled products. So these are all types of businesses that we hope to foster and attract to the BDO zone. Just to give you a little bit further an idea, I provided a characterization of our pipeline on this slide, and each star here you can think of as being a client that we're working with, one of those bioeconomy businesses. And you can see that on the y-axis, the left-hand side, the stage of development. So the bioeconomy tends to be categorized by, early-stage businesses, highly innovative, but a lot of startups. You can also see that across the top, the types of products that are produced by these businesses. And one of the things I wanted to highlight is I think there's a misconception that the bioeconomy focuses on the production of energy, which I think it's safe to say that energy is a part of what bioeconomy companies may do, but there's a wider range of products that they also produce, from food to carbon materials to biochemicals and even building products. So most of the companies that we work with are not in the energy space, although some of them are. So why are we doing this? Well, what we are trying to do is improve the economic and environmental footprint of Nova Scotia. And so what you're seeing here is a slide that shows the projected impact of the clients that are currently in our pipeline once they've commercialized businesses in Nova Scotia. So you see some of the traditional economic development metrics like invested capital, but you also see other metrics as well, including a greenhouse gas impact of 5.87 million tons per year reduction. And to put that in perspective, Nova Scotia is about 13 to 14 million tons per year of GHG emissions, so significant impact from a GHG perspective. And the other thing I'll just highlight here is on the far right-hand side of the slide, our focus on rural investment. And this is near and dear to our hearts. Over three-quarters of the bioeconomy clients that we work with focus on projects in rural Nova Scotia. So how we help these clients is we advocate for them. We provide them with key business-level data that helps them build their business case for projects in Nova Scotia. We connect them with our partners. We're only part of an ecosystem that includes a number of economic development partners from ACOA to Invest Nova Scotia, to Natural Products Canada, to the Assurance Center. We work as a connected ecosystem to help these businesses succeed in the province. The other thing we do is help them with projects that are critical to their growth and commercialization in Nova Scotia, and we can cost share on those projects. So we don't take an investment position, but we can help them out with specific projects. So this business of the Southwestern Nova Scotia BDO Zone. So first of all, BDO zones are an initiative of EcoStrat. EcoStrat are experts at analyzing the feasibility of specific bioeconomy projects. And for the last few years, they've been working on this concept of BDO zones. And the BDO zones are designed to attract new ventures like the ones that I mentioned earlier, which are bioeconomy businesses that can use renewable resources and waste streams, as I said, to produce a range of low-carbon bio-based products. How they do that is interesting. The zone is defined geographically and then analyzed on the basis of what we would call success attributes for bioeconomy projects. So things like the availability of feedstock and the cost of that feedstock, the availability and presence of partners that are willing to host and support bioeconomy projects, and the infrastructure fit in the region and how it supports bioeconomy projects. And EcoStrat doesn't do this just on their own. This is a certified rating system through the Canadian Standards Association, so it's backed by a credible standards-based evaluation. And the output of that is an investment prospectus. At the end of the phase one of the BDO zone development, the zone will receive a rating, AA, A minus, hopefully not a B or a C. And that prospectus is a signal to bioeconomy project developers and investors that the zone has a level of worthiness to support bioeconomy projects. And from there, the zone gets promoted. And there are a number of tools that can be used to promote the zone. There's the Bioeconomy Digest, which is a global platform of bioeconomy project developers and investors. And there is Invest in Canada also supports the promotion of zones and a number of other promoters as well. So the idea is, you know, you get a zone, it receives a good rating, or it should receive a good rating if you've done your homework correctly. It gets promoted, and then the phone rings as people start saying, hey, there are interesting opportunities in your zone. So why Southwestern Nova Scotia? Why do we think it would make a good zone? Well, first of all, there's abundant, sustainable fiber supply produced as byproducts of your forest sector here, particularly your sawmilling sector, very active, vibrant sawmilling sector in Southwestern Nova Scotia. There's a number of quality brownfield sites with engaged partners. George is here with me from Freeman Lumber, as is Billy Freeman. They're very interested in, you know, the BDO zone and how that can create opportunities for them. But there are, you know, other host sites as well, including Mybec in East River, the Kaiser Meadows landfill site, and even the Port Mercy Commercial Park. In addition to that, with the province's adoption and implementation of ecological forestry practices, forestry has really evolved in southwestern Nova Scotia, and we think that will be very attractive to investors who are thinking about the zone and thinking about the quality of their products and the profile of their products. This, you know, world-class forestry practice around ecological forestry should be an overall benefit to the zone. So with that, I'll pause and say, you know, thank you. I hope that gives you a little bit more context, but I'd also like George from Freeman Lumber to present as well. And many of you know George, I'm sure. He's the CFO of Freeman Lumber, but he's also a private landowner with substantial private land holdings here in the county. So, George, I'd like you to speak.
Thank you, folks. I'll give you a high-level overview of Freeman Lumber and our operations and why the BDO zone is important. And just to add a little bit of context, so I'd be the fourth-generation landowner here in Lunenburg County. So Freeman Lumber, it's one of the oldest mills in North America, or running mills in North America. The original Freemans established it in 1832, and now it's still family-owned, operating close to 200 years later. So they've been at this for a long, long time, and they're very, very good at it. It's the largest mill in the province. And we saw, we're unique. Most mills throughout eastern Canada or throughout North America, for that matter, saw one species. And basically, they're either a spruce fir mill that saw as dimension lumber, or they're a pine mill that saw as white pine finishing, they're a hemlock mill, or whatever. Our species here in southwest Nova Scotia is very unique. As many of you heard about the Acadian forest and the species composition that it has. As a result, we saw spruce fir in two lines. We saw studs, which are down to 4 inches, to make 2x3s up to 2x6s, and that gets sawed on a small stud line. And then we also have a random line that saws your dimension 2x4s, 2x6s, 2x8s, 2x10s, and 2x12s up to 16 feet long. That's the spruce component of what we do. We also saw eastern white pine as finished lumber, and that gets a lot of our lumber gets exported throughout North America and other parts of the world as well. So, as you can see, all of a sudden for us to adapt to what we have to saw what's available to us, and we've been quite successful in growing that pine business and also competing in the spruce fir market. And in fact, we are now experimenting. We have sawn hemlock in the past, and we're looking at doing that at a larger scale right now. So in order to do that, this is not a mill that is the backyard mill that you would have seen in many instances throughout rural Nova Scotia. This is highly optimized artificial intelligence. Every log gets scanned as it comes across the line, because our objective is to optimize the value and the recovery from each one of those saw logs. As a result of that, the highest value is going back to the landowner when those trees are harvested. You get one shot at harvesting a tree and optimizing its value for the province and for the landowner and for our business, and that's what we're about. And we continue to reinvest in our mill with the latest technology. So to feed the mill, we have a robust forest management team with professionally trained foresters on staff. We've got about 10 staff that are either professional foresters or forest technicians, and they're out supervising and monitoring our harvest operations and forest management activities. They would oversee 130 contractors, silviculture, road building, harvesters, thinners, PCT crews, all of that. So a very large group of independent business owners are overseen by our crew. And to put it in scale, in 2022, we would have operated it on over 800 private woodlot owners. And that's not just harvest. It's doing the planning. We were out on our family woodlots just last week doing a bunch of planning work. It's doing thinning work, pre-commercial thinning work, commercial thinning work, removing the lower value trees, because what do we want to do? We want to maximize the value back to the private landowners, to the sawmill, and to the province by growing high value trees, which can be converted into lumber. And as well, our harvest operations, we're also the biggest supplier. Rod mentioned Maybach earlier, AFT hardwood mill. So anything that we don't saw ourselves, we move to other mills throughout the province. Despite all our efforts and our reinvestment in the mill to optimize the value and the recovery from every saw log that goes in, if you think about it, there's something that's round that goes in, and when it comes out, it's square. So that process results in residuals to the tune of about 250,000 tons a year of sawmill residuals. And right now, we have no long-term home for those residuals. And we are continually working. Billy's title as the business development officer, he spends most of his days for the last 2 years trying to find a long-term home for these residuals. And we work with Rod, who's been very, very helpful, on a regular basis, trying to attract long-term bioeconomy opportunities to this part of the province so that we can have a long-term security for the sawmill and for the landowners with these residual products. And 250,000 tons come from our operations. There's potential for another 150,000 tons of low-grade, what we call, what would have traditionally been called pulpwood, that's available for use towards this as well. And a lot of that, if you think about it, if we're already taking something down to 4 inches that gets converted into lumber, you know, this is the low-grade wood, and it's especially prevalent in ecological forestry and commercial thinnings as a result of us trying to grow our high-value timber. So in conclusion, as you can appreciate, the BDO zone would be a very, I think, great way of promoting what we have here in southwestern Nova Scotia, and a great opportunity to further strengthen the forest industry and the rural communities around and grow the economy in the area. So I guess now any questions, Rod or I would certainly be
welcome
to answer.
Do we have any questions for them? Councillor Haysom?
Thank you so much. Thank you for the presentation. I'm just curious, the Nova Scotia Innovation Hub, would the purpose be to support any industries other than forestry or any companies other than Freeman Lumber?
Thank you, Councillor. Excellent question. So, yes, we would support more companies than just Freeman Lumber. There are a number of partners that we work with here in southwestern Nova Scotia and really across Nova Scotia. But just to name a few, I mentioned Mybeck earlier. Kaiser Meadows landfill site is also interested in establishing bioeconomy projects, as is the Port Mercy Commercial Park based in Brooklyn, the former Bowater Mercy site, and Freeman Lumber.
Go ahead, Councillor Hayes.
Thank you so much. So, again, and coming back to other potential industries, is this just for the byproducts of forestry, or are there other industries that could benefit from this hub area? I want to know about other than forestry.
Yeah, it's a great question. The BDO zone is set up to support, in this case, the use of byproducts from the forest industry. So I think what would be fair to say is the BDO zone will focus on that. I will add, though, Councillor Haysom, that the Nova Scotia Innovation Hub does not only focus on, bioeconomy projects that use forest residuals. Our mandate is broader than that. It's any conversion of a renewable resource, whether that be from the oceans, from agriculture, from forestry, or even waste, municipal solid waste or other waste streams into higher value products. So while the BDO zone may focus on forestry, and that may create some other opportunities, the Nova Scotia Innovation Hub has a much broader focus. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. If I can just add to that too, it's once you start to build, if we attract something that's got some economies of scale. I know we were at a conference not long ago where they were looking at agricultural waste, and the opportunity that's also a feedstock. But by default, the forest industry would have the largest component of mass available or raw material available. You get that economy of scale brought in with that, and then you have the opportunity to create marketing opportunities for agricultural waste and others as well.
Okay, excellent. Councillor Staton has a question.
I've got a question. I understand what you're telling us, and it's quite interesting, but what are you asking from this council? What do you want from us?
Thank you, Councillor Staton. So, we understand that the council is evaluating the potential support for the BDO zone, and so other municipalities have agreed to participate in the zone in terms of participating on a steering committee that we would lead. It would be a small role that the small use of time for the municipalities. So that's one piece. And the Nova Scotia Innovation Hub is willing to substantially fund the zone. I think we could easily get 75% of the funding to do it. And there were some, requests that the municipalities would combine to bring the other 25% to the table. So I'm not sure where that decision is at. I thought that you may have, you know, broach that before in a council meeting. But if it's possible to, you know, get that level of support, that would be an ask from us.
Thank you very much.
I understood that the level of support that they were asking for right now was Mr. Waters brought to us on November 22nd was to explore the opportunity by way of a study. Is that's still where we sit? Is it by way of study? Just to be clear.
Yeah, let me try to address the question I can. We did have a discussion at a previous council meeting about a funding request, but council declined that funding request. So these folks are not here asking for a funding request because we've already declined that funding request. During that meeting was asked that it be better if council had more knowledge about what a BDO zone is and who the partners are. So we've asked them to come today to provide education to council, not for a request. The Economic Development Department, because we're looking at our economic development strategy and projects that we're doing moving forward, is trying to get a sense from council if these type of projects you want staff to spend staff time on, not financial assistance, if that clarifies the question.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. So we have Councillor DeLong and then Mayor Bubba.
Actually, Councillor Statton asked my question, so I guess I'm just curious if this is coming to us in the form of a motion next time we meet, or if we're just receiving education on this.
No, I understand it's education only, no motion.
Well, thank you for your presentation.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Balvergetza?
Thank you for your presentation, and yes, biomass, the residual that you're producing, it's hard to believe it's 250,000 ton. That's a lot of residual. Does Sustain use any of that residual in the current process? I know they're taking garbage and transforming it into energy and other things, but do they have the capacity to use any of this residual to date in there? Because I know that they can use more residual than what they are currently getting.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So are you referring to Sustain Technologies based at Kaiser Meadows?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So at this point, Sustain does not use sawmill residuals in the process. And not to bore you with the details, I mean, I think they're fascinating, but they break down municipal solid waste and extract the biomass portion of that, so the leftover packaging and cardboard, and they convert that into energy products. And what's really interesting about that business, they're one of our clients, is they're entirely energy self-sufficient. So their process produces residual energy, which they run the whole process on. But, they don't have a need for sawmill residuals at this point.
And I guess just out of curiosity, how many people are Freeman Lumber employing right now?
180 full-time employees.
Is that an all-time high, or is that? I know there's a lot of automation now in the industry, and so on. Is that
that would be at our peak? Yeah.
And you've just recently gone through a huge expansion.
Correct. Yeah.
And that expansion allows you to do what?
Again, it's we're using the latest technology to. So, for example, we've implemented artificial intelligence and prograding at our pine line, for example. And Billy can probably speak to it a little better than me. But to optimize, so everything was getting humanly graded before, and at line speed, at the end of a 8, 9, 10 hour shift, nobody's decision making is as good as what it is at the start of the day. And from that perspective, you can't even keep up with it. What this does is all of a sudden you've got consistent grading for that whole entire shift. And what it's done, as opposed to our graders doing actual grading, they're now doing quality control and doing what I would call higher value work and higher skilled work. No employees were replaced in that process, but now they're doing things to make sure that that's great. The other thing that we've done, we've improved our input line so that we can get more throughput through our with our new debarking and a log deck project. And then we've also done, we've basically doubled the number of bins at the end of our sawmill, which allows us to do more sorts. And again, more sorts enable us to extract more value out of that same piece of lumber than what we were previously getting. And then the other thing that we've just completed is we had scanning technology at our edger and our trimmer. It was old and outdated. I shouldn't say old and outdated. I think it was 8 or 9 years old, which is old in technology terms. So now it has even more abilities than what it had and allows us to pre-grade our lumber at the sawmill. And the sawmill makes the decisions as to, okay, well, if we've got a piece of what normally would have got sent to the kiln and then sent to the planer and then got refused as being unsaleable and then got chipped, now that decision is getting made at the sawmill, which improves our drying times and our throughput times at the planer mill. And again, it also allows us to extract higher value. So to put it in perspective, in that spruce fir, and sorry, I'm getting into a lot of details here, I apologize, but to put it in perspective, that spruce fir for that construction grade, extracting value is extremely important in that. If you think about our pine business, what do you like to see when you walk in and you see pine trim and that sort of stuff? Really nice, high-quality lumber. That's where we're going to get big pickups in this. So, again, it's optimizing and extracting the most value and the most volume out of the product that goes in so that we can, in turn, pay good prices back to our landowners. Because if we don't, we're competing against mills throughout North America that are doing the exact same thing as we are. So we need to stay on top of our technology.
Go ahead. Technology has allowed you to use every bit of the log that goes through the mill, with the exception of this 250 tons, but I understand the amount of logs that's going through there,
yeah,
too. One of the things that I think was up front in the last time this was at our table was climate change. And what are you doing as a company to reduce greenhouse gas emissions? And does technology allow you to do that as well with the automation that you're seeing? And reforesting, what are you doing on that end to silviculture, whatever, to allow that to happen?
So I'll make sure, if I don't catch all those points, just remind me which ones I missed. But with respect to climate change, if we started at the beginning, and Rod can probably even speak better to this, but the forest industry itself is a carbon negative industry. So everybody else is trying to get to carbon neutral. We're already there. Not to say that we aren't still doing things to try to get to even more carbon negative. But we're already there, right out of the gates. So let's start the premise with that. With changing our footprint, there's two things. When we, the product that we're producing, the solid wood products, the more of a tree that gets converted into a solid wood product, how many people live in houses throughout Lunenburg County that are hundreds of years old? That carbon is stored for a long, long period of time. So by nature, the product that we're producing and trying to get more recovery out of that saw log into solid wood products, we're deferring carbon. The second piece of that is probably a little bit more where you were going, is that we are actively looking at ways of reducing our energy footprint as well. Simple things, we're working with Nova Scotia Power right now to study our energy uses and our peak demands and all that sort of thing at the very elementary level. We're also looking and exploring the potential for alternative sources of energy which are not the traditional coal-dependent power that we currently receive. So we are exploring ways to make us, to my point, even more carbon negative than we are. Things like wind energy, cogeneration, because of course we use a lot of steam to heat our kilns. So there's opportunity for cogeneration, battery storage, things like that. So managing the power that we're currently consuming and also changing the source of where that power comes from. Reforestation, actually, we were kind of having this discussion earlier, is we're in the business of growing trees. We don't want to see land converted to, so there's a difference between forestry, and Rod's a forester, I'm not, but I've got enough to be dangerous, I guess, maybe. And there's a difference between land conversion and forestry. So we want to see land maintained as active forest because we need lumber, we need raw material for our products. And like we said, we're a green industry already. So anything that is actively managed for forestry is there are a number of things that are done. Either it's planned for natural regeneration and it's reassessed and it might need some planting and that sort of stuff, or it's planted. There are a number of different techniques, and Rod can explain all those different techniques. But when we're assessing our sites and when we're actively managing private woodlot owners, we're not doing the cut and run. It's like, okay, yes, there might be a final felling because that's what makes sense. But what's the plan in order to reforest that so that it continues to be productive and growing so that we're here for another 200 years from now? Again, a lot of times when we see cutting, sometimes necessarily it's deforestation, but it's deforestation because the land is getting converted into whatever purpose it might be. So anything that we're actively managing, we're managing for continued forestry. And then I think
you should take my job.
What? The other piece. There was one other question. The climate change. That was the other piece. The white pine we're continually trying to grow that white pine business for a number of reasons. It's abundant throughout southwest Nova Scotia now, and we seem to be the customers really like our pine, and we've successfully been able to grow that. Coincidentally, white pine is one of those trees that will do well under the warming climate. So it's very prevalent throughout New England, and so as you can appreciate, as their climate migrates to our climate, white pine is one of those trees that's going to do well. So wherever we can, we're actively managing our stands that have white pine to promote that white pine. Where in the past, it might have been that balsam fir was promoted over that white pine in the old pulp area. Now we're promoting the white pine. And coincidentally, white pine also favors itself very well to these ecological forest harvests that Rod was speaking about earlier. So now I'll let the forester talk about everything that I said wrong.
I don't know what I can add to that. That was amazing. I just wanted to, you mentioned the climate change piece, and I just wanted to point this out. At the Nova Scotia Innovation Hub, we actually did an analysis of the Nova Scotia forest industry, complete analysis, modeled it over a 100-year time frame to look at its carbon impact. And George was almost exactly right, except he called it a carbon neutral industry. It's not carbon neutral. It's incredibly carbon favorable. To the tune of our forest industry actually sequesters or will avoid about 200 million metric tons of carbon over the 100-year time frame that we modeled. And so put that in perspective, 200 million metric tons. Nova Scotia's emissions are about 15 million metric tons per year. So we're a substantial contributor to mitigation of greenhouse gases in the province. How do we do this should be your question. So there's a few things, and George spoke to it. We ensure that forests are healthy and growing. Healthy and growing forests sequester and store carbon. So that's an important piece. The second piece is we maximize value from our sawmilling sector. So the opportunities that George talked about in terms of maximizing the lumber output and storing it in our desks and our walls and whatnot is a form of switching storage from the forest to another form of storage which sequesters that carbon for a long time frame. And the third thing that is important to, achieving that, greenhouse gas benefit is substituting bio-based products that are produced from wood fiber for petroleum-based products. And if you think back to what we talked about and what we're trying to achieve with the BDO zone, that's exactly it. is to attract companies that can use the sawmill residuals and the byproduct wood fiber that George spoke of and produce higher value, low carbon products. So the net of those three produces an incredibly favorable forest sector from a climate change and greenhouse gas mitigation perspective.
Perfect. We have Councillor Moore, Councillor Oikle, and then Councillor Haysom.
Thank you. I'm allowed to when this came before council before, I had to leave the table because it's a conflict of interest for me because I have my spouse works for Freeman's Lumber. Yeah. So anyway, but I did listen to the discussion around the table, and there wasn't enough information brought to the table for council to understand just what the ask was financially and the whole project itself. So now that it's been presented again, the information's been here, and of course, like the chips and stuff, and without Northern Pulp, without Brooklyn Energy, the chips, you got to do something with the waste. And will there be a chance for a financial ask again to this council?
If that question is to be, then by all means, yes.
Okay.
And it's.
I really would like to see this come back because now that council realizes what this means to the forestry people in their districts, I think that it's good that this presentation was here.
Councillor Moore, I appreciate that feedback. Yep. And yes, of course, if council are willing to receive that, we've of course put that ask back on the table. Yep. And just to be clear, it's not a huge project. The total project is $77,000.
Yep.
It's well within the Innovation Hub's ability to cover that. But we do think it's important to have local community support, which is why the nominal ask from council, not only in terms of financial support, but more importantly, the in-kind support from folks like Dave, mm-hmm. who can help participate and guide some of these projects as they come in.
Okay. Councillor Oikle.
Thank you very much. So I'm interested in the industries that could be developed in this biocircular economy, and especially, obviously, for the tonnage of waste that Freeman has. So are there any plans that your company is thinking of on its own to develop that tonnage, to use it up in some way as a product?
So I'll phrase this as in as I say to one of my coworkers, Michael Jordan didn't make it in baseball, right? He was very good at baseball, but he was extremely good at basketball. We're extremely good at sawing lumber and growing trees. And we have a residual, and as a result, we have a number of residuals. Having said that, we obviously want to work very closely and have been engaged with active engagement with, I'm going to say, close to a dozen different opportunities over the past 2 years. And Rod, I'm going to get into Rod's waters here a little bit again, but the challenge with a lot of these industries is that the technology is getting better, and it's much further along than it was 2 years ago, but it's still not there at a commercial scale yet. So we've got, call it four or five on the go right now that are we're actively pursuing that we think might prove to fruition. Again, we don't have the science background and the technology background, that sort of stuff to develop that ourselves, but as a partner, as a feedstock supplier, that's our role. And as I was saying, we work with Rod quite a bit to help us. Rod is great at filtering what from the science side of things and the fit and that sort of stuff. And I think that's also what the BDO zone would do is that helps filter us so that we get a pairing with what's the right technology, what's the right scale. What's the feedstock that we have, and we get a good pairing that way. Rod, I'll let you.
George, I think you nailed it. I mean, I think the objective of to back up, when you think about our pipeline slide that I showed, it was categorized by companies that produce a wide range of products, but also when you looked at their stage of development, many of them are you know, early stage and maturing. And so what does that mean? You know, we need to evaluate a number of them in order to make the right match with, you know, partners in anywhere where we work, including southwestern Nova Scotia. And so part of that is an investment attraction effort, right? And so the BDO zone is really an investment attraction tool to help attract a wide range of, you know, potential bioeconomy projects and industries, and then do some vetting of those projects to make sure they make sense for the zone and match them with partners in the zone. I think that answered the question.
Thank you.
Councillor Haysom.
Thank you so much. This feels like it's been more of a presentation about forestry, so I'd like to bring it back to the Nova Scotia Innovation Hub, if I could. Could you tell me who funds the Innovation Hub? Where does the money come from? And I guess who sits on, is it a board of directors? Yeah. Could you explain a little bit about the
Absolutely.
Composition, please?
Happy
thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Haysom. So the Nova Scotia Innovation Hub, as I mentioned earlier, is a not-for-profit association. We have an independent board of directors that's composed of a number of individuals. I hate to try and name them all because sometimes I miss them, but if you go to our website, you'll see who sits on our board and where they come from. But I can tell you that it's a wide range of industry and academia and public sector people that sit on our board. Our funding, if you look back over time, we were born and conceived in 2015. Since that time, we've had injection of funding from the private sector. There was a large private sector entity who saw a lot of value in what we were doing. And we've had we've also had injections of funding from the public sector as well, including both provincial levels of government and federal levels of government. So I think what is valuable about the Nova Scotia Innovation Hub is, and we work hard to try and make it this way, it is a collaboration between, you know, industry, government, and academia, and our board members provide a range of both guidance and funding. Councillor Haysom, would it be helpful if I spoke a little bit about some of the specific people who are on our board?
If it's available on the website, I can certainly look that up. Thanks.
Yeah, you'll see a wide range of forest sector partners there, including Port Hawkesbury Paper. And Northern Pulp is there, to be fair. They've taken an interest in the bioeconomy. And as well, we've got folks like Sustain Technologies who are located here. We have Department of Agriculture, Department of Natural Resources and Renewables. We have FP Innovations, as well as the Forsurance Center. Dalhousie University is there as well. And I feel like I'm missing somebody important, so I'll stop. And apologies to whoever I missed.
Excellent. Are there any more questions? Okay. With that, I thank you for the presentation. It was much needed education. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so we're going to move along and go to 9.1.2, the 2023 property tax sale. Yes. She's coming back for the tax sale, but yes.
Thank you, Councillor Hubley. So we have before us a report on the 2023 tax sale, which is coming on March the 6th. As we all know, prior to the COVID pandemic, we were holding all our tax sales by public auction. The last 2 years, we went through a tender process. So it certainly is council's decision on which way we go this year. We think that the tender process itself was very straightforward. We learned a lot of lessons, and it went very well as staff. We know that it can be a little problematic when you have the auction. You need RCMP or some kind of security. You get a lot of people in a room, all those kinds of things. It's not that we can't do it. We've done it for years and years and years. It's not an accessible way to have a tax sale because it would be very difficult to maybe, if you were vision impaired or something like that, to try to bid. That would be hard. You might need assistance with that. We think the tender process probably is a more accessible way to do it. But we're certainly open to have a discussion about it. So there is a few alternatives. We could have the tender, we could have a public auction, or we could defer, council could defer the tax sale. We talked about deferral last year and talked about how, you know, collection calls and payment arrangements and all those kinds of things can be dominoed effect if you don't have the sale and kind of call people to make payments on their properties. And our tax sale by tender have been very successful. So staff are actually recommending that. But we're certainly open to having a discussion about it.
We have a question. Mayor Balaver-Getson.
Well, no. The only thing that I've seen, and I've seen many of these tax sales dating back to 1997, and I will say that the process that we've adopted now has brought us, I think, in line with where we should be for this day and age. Looking at the online tax sales, I have received some positive comments. I have received a couple comments that they feel they need to be in person. But overall, with the amount of people we used to put in our old municipal building and security that we used to bring in to make sure everyone stayed, I guess at level keel if they didn't get the bid they wanted to, and the time that it took to organize and put on, I really think that the online has worked well for us. And it hasn't shown that we have that they've been underbid at all. If anything, it seems to be gone the other way. So I guess at this point I don't understand why we would go back. If it's not broke, don't look for a different solution at this point. It seems to be working.
Are there any other questions for Elena? Councillor Statton?
Just a quick, I would agree with the mayor that it seems to be a less bothersome policy or process for the staff, and I totally agree that we should go that route. Can you give us some numbers? Have the numbers increased in the properties for sale this year as opposed to the last year or so?
No, actually the properties for sale this year are a lot lower. I think last time I checked with Joanne there was 23, and we've had over 50 over the last couple of years. So, I mean, that's good. That means people are paying their tax bills, and that's what we want them to, or they're at least paying off that third year. Or they sold their house. Perhaps that could be. I see kind of a decrease in it. I mean, we certainly, as staff, have you know, kind of over the last couple of years had a few lessons learned, figured out what worked, what didn't work. And overall, it's been a pretty positive experience. And when we do get an overbid on a property, you know, the property owner can make application to get that surplus money back. And we hold it for 20 years to give them that opportunity.
Any other questions for Elena? Okay, then. Councillor Greek?
You mentioned that you found a few things that worked and didn't work and tweaks. What differences would be this year if we went with the tender tax sale as opposed to last year?
Well, I think operationally the only difference would be what we asked for as a deposit. The first year we had no deposit, and we had people bidding and bidding on everything and then withdrawing. And so every 3 days they'd withdraw and we'd have to put it out to the next successful bidder. That was just a little bit more work on the other end. From what we have noticed with other municipal units in other jurisdictions, the minimum bid is the deposit. So if there's $1,000 owing on a property, then that's the deposit on the property. Because it's pretty easy to return a certified check back if they were not successful. And it would only bring in the serious bidders too.
Okay.
Are there any other questions for Elena? Okay, I think we move to want to put the motion on the floor. Councillor Vino, would you put that?
Certainly, thank you, Chair. To the Chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommend to Municipal Council to approve the tender call for March 6, 2023, and further approve the use of tender call for all future tax sale proceedings. And I so move.
Seconded by Councillor Wynott. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Councillor Hazem?
Thank you very much. I won't be supporting this motion for a variety of reasons, but one concern I have is when we look at the first use of the tender process, we had some properties that were hugely overbid, and I think that it in some ways provides an unfair advantage to people who live outside the municipality and don't perhaps have the same, let's say, I would like to see the opportunities afforded to people within the municipality to make those purchases, and I think there's something to be said for showing up in person. Also, when there is a large overbid, I think we need to consider what that implication could be for tax rates for neighboring properties. And also, something I had actually spoken with Elena about, the potential impact for the municipality in terms of if a bid is made, the municipality can hold a certain amount of money and return it if it is redeemed at an interest rate of 10%. So if someone is making a huge bid on a property because they aren't in the room to know that maybe the average bid would be $5,000, $6,000 and instead you get a bid of $300,000 because the person's not in the room, what are the implications for the municipality in terms of paying out some of that that interest? So those are some of the reasons that I won't be supporting it. I do understand that it is perhaps less work for staff, but I think it is also important for the people within the municipality to have that opportunity to see where the bids are going and to pay fair prices and make fair bids. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Bolivar-Getson. I guess I'm going to disagree on some of that because in the past, my understanding was that we had numbered companies as well that were in the room that were individuals bidding for other people. So we still had that in the past as well. So I think that the market is going to dictate what the prices of the land goes for. And right now and over the past 2-3 years, COVID, along with the increase in the land prices in our area and throughout the country, actually, has shown that the market value has increased. And the assessment roll that has just gone out, I'm sure that you've all been hearing from individuals, because I have. So I guess we can expect to get higher prices at tax sales.
Anything else to add? Any more discussion? Okay. All those in favor? All those against? Okay. So Councillor Haysom against. Was there anyone over here? You were in favor? Councillor Statton? Okay. Excellent. Okay. Councillor Haysom is against and motion is passed. Put the mic on. 9.2.1, Visitor Information Center, and I believe this is Ruth. Awesome.
All right. Good morning. Good morning. Hopefully we left the best for last. I'm here presenting Visitor Information Center options. As you all probably remember, I presented on November 8th the Visitor Information Center lease report. It was the consensus of council to proceed with further investigation of extending the lease in order to complete the 2023 visitor season at 125 Cornwall Road Blockhouse. In addition, we were to initiate communication with the Mahone Bay Tourism Chamber of Commerce and Lunenburg Board of Trade to gauge their interest in a potential partnership regarding their VIC locations. So just to recap a few key points from my last presentation, on average, 42 to 43% of visitors coming into our Blockhouse VIC head to the town of Lunenburg. Many travelers are using internet and smartphones to gather their travel information. Blockhouse visitor numbers peaked in 2017 and are on a steady decline. Face-to-face interactions are still important, and the cost per visitor in 2022 was approximately $11.95. So research is showing that visitor information should be present where people gather, which is the rationale of why we want to go with mobile kiosks. And the current VIC location does have geographical challenges when it comes to serving the entire municipality. Staff inquired with the landlord of 125 Cornwall Road Blockhouse to determine if he would be willing to extend the lease for an additional 7 months. So the landlord is willing to extend the lease of the Visitor Information Center. A 7-month extension would result in the lease expiring November 30th of 2023. So this extension would enable the VIC to operate for the upcoming visitor season, but also provide sufficient time for us to clean out the premises after the season concludes. The current sublease agreement with the MJSB to rent the additional office space will expire April 30th of 2023, and they have indicated that they're not interested in continuing to lease the space from us. The revenue received from that rental agreement was $1,156.90 per month. Whoops, that skipped two slides. Okay. So this is a breakdown of what a 7-month extension of the current lease would cost. Here is the revenue and expenses. So the total projected cost for a 7-month extension is $55,780. So for this current fiscal of 22-23, our expected cost is approximately $31,000. A 7-month extension of the lease would result in an increased cost of $24,780 for the 23-24 fiscal. If Modal wanted to extend the lease beyond the 7 months, the estimated annual operating cost would be $75,930, and that would be without taking into consideration the revenue from a potentially renting that additional office space. Initial meeting was held with the Mahone Bay Tourism Chamber of Commerce, who's responsible for the management and cost of the operations for the Mahone Bay VIC, to discuss a potential partnership. This VIC is located at 165 Edgewater Street, Mahone Bay. In 2022, the Mahone Bay VIC saw 9,914 visitors, and they are open seasonally from June until early October. Typically, this VIC operates with one full-time manager, one full-time travel counselor, and one part-time travel counselor. Just to provide some context of the number of visitors they saw in 2022, the Blockhouse VIC saw 5,388. So Mahone Bay did expect that their visitor numbers would be higher this year. It was lower in part due to their inability to onboard staff, so they had a later opening and operated with reduced hours. So the Mahone Bay Tourism Chamber and Commerce provided an initial proposal, and their proposal included participation in the interview process. They wanted staff available to review, discuss, and agree upon a VIC budget for the season, and provide approval for a 50% cost share of unfunded costs. And they also asked that staff would be available for participation in the development of a year-end evaluation framework just to assess how the partnership is working and what worked well, what didn't work well throughout the season. So the MBTCC suggested that they may need to add another full-time employee. They said this was based on the fact that they'd be serving like a larger geographical area, but also wanted an additional staff member so we had the flexibility to have someone to work mobile kiosks. So the cost breakdown is listed here. So without the additional employee, it would be approximately $9,560 for that partnership. If we did add an additional full-time employee, it would be $15,980. But I do want you to keep in mind these are just preliminary conversations regarding what a potential partnership could look like. So we can always revisit these conversations and negotiate. In addition, both the MBTCC and Lunenburg Board of Trade need a formal approval from their respective boards.
We have a question. Sure. Councillor Oikle?
Yes, so I'm just wondering, you said that they'll be serving a larger geographic area, and this could also apply to the town of Bridgewater. Do they only share information about their town only? So they don't talk about Chester, they don't talk about Liverpool or Lunenburg. They only talk when they're in there, and the only information they have in that facility is about the town of Mahone Bay.
That's a good question. And if the visitor comes in and they're specifically asking about other areas, typically the staff is trained to provide the additional information. But from how it's described, the priority is kind of to drive the visitor to the Mahone Bay businesses. Like if they're looking for restaurants, they're going to solely suggest Mahone Bay restaurants. Sometimes when a visitor comes in, they know what they're looking for, so the Mahone Bay counselors would provide that specific information.
Okay. A supplementary, if I may.
Sure.
When I go into a visitor center, I look around at what's on the walls. Do they have things on the walls have to do with the municipality of the District of Lunenburg? Would they have those things already on their walls?
So Mahone Bay and Lunenburg, they would both have our brochures located on their walls, and we ensure throughout the season to maintain contact so that they have plenty of our brochures. So we have a couple different ones, like our trail brochure, and we have our Lunenburg region map. So they do already have them on the wall. But, like, in a partnership, we would look at things, where is it positioned? Are they using language to prioritize our operators as well as their own? So we would implement specific things that would prioritize that our information is provided to the visitor equally.
Thank you.
One other question, Councillor Vino?
Looking at the cost here, I'm not certain what it is we're buying or what it is we're contributing towards. Is it the hopes that they'll talk about businesses and places in the district for these costs? I can see the staff person if we were providing that staff, but the initial cost of $95.60, I'm not really sure what we're getting.
So when we approached Mahone Bay for a partnership, like their proposal was to do a 50% cost share of unfunded costs. But what I'm hoping to accomplish, and I think is best for the municipality, is if we go in and we have input on training and we can define the parameters of the partnership. But we do know Mahone Bay prioritizes their own businesses, so we're hoping to have input on ensuring the staff directs visitors to our operators and put more of a highlight on our municipality. And then in regards to our website and social media, we've talked about more collaboration that way. So it gives us a presence and input on training, and we're hoping that in addition to the training, we would take them on fam tours in our area, our municipality, because we know that some Mahone Bay specifically, they're not maybe getting out to modal tourism operators as much as we might want them to.
Supplementary. The Mahone Bay Center is also very small compared to the space that we have at the current VIC. Is there concerns of adding additional brochures and materials for Lunenburg District? And have they asked about that?
We have about three brochures. We have, well, primarily two brochures that we're pushing now is our trail map and our Lunenburg region map. So I don't foresee that being a problem. It is limited in space compared to what we have. But if we are initiating a partnership, we expect to have 50% input on what's on the walls and where those are located. So those specific details will be hashed out, but I would be fighting for it being our brochures being put at eye level, being as soon as you walk in, and then we could have input on additional promotional material like signage or advertising for our tourism operators.
Okay, Mayor Bobagetson? I'm looking at this, and I'm still trying to figure out if this is what we should be doing going forward. I travel quite a bit. VICs or tourist information is available at a variety of different types of locations, from businesses, gas stations, to, I guess, community infrastructure such as the LCLC. I think that in the past, even the location of our VIC serviced to other towns more than it actually serviced our own area. I don't know. I don't think the Mahone Bay solution here is the one that will best fit the needs if we're looking at our whole municipality. I think that, yes, it may fix a very small portion of it, but I think that we need to think outside the box on how we really need to promote our region and what best works. And I know we've been putting a Band-Aid on our VIC here for a number of years trying to see if it's what we need to do or where we need to go, and that's not any fault of staff or whatever. I just think it's a changing environment to how people plan, how people travel, how people do a lot of things. The cell phone. Are we better to put more money into our websites and so on? I do know that there is a certain clientele, though, that doesn't frequent those. So does the public and private sector, do we have a way to do that through other means that probably would service more of our area? You could have them in different areas, a lot easier than concentrating on one spot that I don't feel meets the needs of our whole municipality. We have Councillor Moore, then Councillor Bell, and then Councillor Oichel.
Can you explain mobile kiosk 5-foot tent a little bit better to me?
Sure. So a mobile kiosk is essentially a pop-up tent. The 5-foot is just in reference to the sizing. So it's a smaller pop-up tent that would accommodate 1 to 2 people standing within it. That's a small option, so it would be easy to transport. But this tent would essentially have whatever brand we are under. Right now, it's the Lunenburg region is our tourism mm-hmm. brand. So it would have that on the top and then panels that would say Lunenburg region and have our website on it. So staff would be traveling to things like Canada Day events in different communities, say New Germany, for example, have the mobile kiosk handing out information, promotional items, and then letting them know what's going on in the area. And then that staff would be trained to also know what kind of events are going on, but also to be aware of our tourism operators, restaurants, accommodations, that sort of thing.
And would that be a need to hire more staff?
Well, each of the options has the mobile kiosk kind of brought into it. So it's not a request for additional staff, more staff than we have currently. Like, if we were to go with the Mahone Bay Tourism and Chamber of Commerce, the costs that I estimated here have a staff member built in mm-hmm. that would be flexible to do that. But as you'll see next slide, a couple slides over, Lunenburg Board of Trade Partnership,
They wanted us to fund two staff positions, so that doesn't allow for an extra staff person to be available for the mobile kiosks. Mm-hmm. So that in that partnership, we would have to have an additional part-time staff member.
Okay. And within this, is there anything to sort of upgrade the kiosks that we have out there now? Dave?
So funds are not built into the discussions relating to the BSCs for improvements to those kiosks, but those improvements that do need to come because they are outdated, mm-hmm. but that could come from our tourism marketing budget because, the overall budgets for marketing, and I touch on that budget a little bit later in the presentation.
So basically what we're being asked is if we want to continue to lease at Blockhouse for seven more months?
So one of the options is maybe to cost out, do we want to extend the lease for an additional 7 months?
Right.
If we do extend that lease, there needs to be a decision going forward how council would like to proceed with the VIC. Do we want to extend an additional 3 years after that? So, like, before you now is the seven-month extension, right. Options for partnerships, and then costing relating to what it would cost annually to continue to fund the VIC.
Okay. Sorry, I was just told to let you finish your presentation.
We have two more questions. Three, actually. And then, okay.
Yeah.
We'll get Councillor Bell and then Councillor Oikle, and then we'll let Ruth finish her presentation. Okay, Councillor Oikle, you agree?
Yes.
All right,
thank you.
Continue.
Okay, so staff also met with representatives from the Lunenburg Board of Trade to discuss potential partnership regarding the Lunenburg VIC. So the Lunenburg VIC is located at 11 Blockhouse Hill Road in Lunenburg and is operational from mid-May until October 31st. The waterfront VIC is open July and August. And between these two locations in 2022, they had 18,542 visitors. In 2019, they had 15,074. So typically, these two locations operate with 6 to 8 employees, four of which are full-time and shared between the two locations. So for employees that work at the Lunenburg VIC, they're also responsible for making campground reservations and accepting payments. So the Lunenburg Board of Trade's initial partnership proposal included asking us to cover the wages for two full-time staff members. So we calculated this at $15.50 per hour based on 40-hour weeks. So roughly the cost would be $27,820. So that $27,820 includes $22,820 of the two positions, full-time two positions, plus an additional $5,000 for a staff member to operate the mobile kiosk. The Lunenburg Board of Trade Partnership, like I stated before, does not include the availability of a staff member to work the mobile kiosk for the events. So the cost for that would be $5,000 to $9,000. If we were able to have a part-time staff member, it would be approximately $5,000, although we would anticipate there might be challenges hiring a part-time seasonal staff member, so we give the range of $9,000 here in case that position needs to be a full-time position. So as mentioned before with the Mahone Bay partnership, that we would be having input on everything from where our brochures are located, how staff is trained. We've talked specifically with the Lunenburg Board of Trade how we can collaborate on social media, on website, and things like that. So here is a breakdown of our online tourism presence improvements and mobile kiosks. We've priced out the options below based on quotes we've received.
So in addition to the decision relating to the VIC lease, staff are bringing forward an operating budget request for the 23-24 fiscal year to increase the tourism marketing budget from $24,000 to $38,000, and this is to improve the online tourism presence of the municipality. So this is an aside from the negotiations relating to the VIC lease. Currently, the tourism marketing budget's used for brochure design and printing, the distribution of brochures across the province, advertising, promotional material, and professional photography. The request to increase this budget is to cover the cost of a new website, update the tourism brand, and purchase a mobile kiosk. So the current tourism marketing budget is $24,000, and it's projected that we will have a $4,000 variance at the end of this current fiscal. So, therefore, an increase of $14,000 is what's requested to facilitate the creation of a new website, updated tourism brand, and the mobile kiosk. The options relating to the decision ahead and the respective costs are outlined below. So option one would be to extend the VIC lease for an additional 7 months, and that's projected to cost $56,830. Option two is the Mahone Bay Tourism and Chamber of Commerce Partnership. The projected cost for that is $15,980. Option three was the Lunenburg Board of Trade Partnership. The cost for that, $27,820. And option four is a combined partnership with Mahone Bay Tourism Chamber of Commerce and Lunenburg Board of Trade, which would total $38,800. So a partnership with the Mahone Bay Tourism Chamber of Commerce and Lunenburg Board of Trade is approximately $18,030 less than the option of extending the VIC lease for an additional 7 months. And combined in 2022, the Lunenburg VIC and the Mahone Bay VIC had 28,438 visitors.
Okay, so we're ready to take a couple questions?
No? Okay. So, in conclusion, I just have the following motions that are before the Policy and Strategy Committee, but I'm willing to take any questions.
Okay. Councillor Bell?
Thank you very much. Last fall, I traveled to Boston, and I went online a month before the trip. I knew every hotel that I'd stay at. I made reservations before I left. I knew every restaurant that I was going to stop at. I even knew their menus and picked out my choice before I got to the site. I knew which facilities provided entertainment that I was looking for. So today I see a stationary kiosk giving value. They could be located at Miller Point, Sunset Park, somewhere in New Germany, or enhanced websites would be a better investment. Our economic development has done really well for enhancing websites in the past that we used over the last couple of years. So online tourism presence, option five, is what I'm sort of thinking, and option five doesn't exist there. 3 years ago, I did the same for Arizona. The year before that, I did it for Florida. I think the majority of people who travel today are not necessarily stopping. I try to avoid stopping in tourist bureaus along the way. Now, I go back a few years. I pushed hard to get this partnership in Blockhouse with the town of Bridgewater and ourselves, and we tried with the town of Lunenburg and the town of Mahone Bay, but at that time they didn't want to talk to us. So I'm really not in favor of partnerships with either of them. I think we can do more on our own, and the option doesn't exist there.
Yeah, so that's good insight. So the reason I didn't include that option was just based on the comments from my previous presentation. I didn't think that was the way the group was that council was leaning, but I agree with your insights. Research is showing that people are primarily going online to find their travel information, We do know that there's certain decisions that we can impact when a traveler's in our area, and those are decisions relating to restaurants or activities. Things like accommodations are usually pre-booked. So thank you for your comments.
Councillor Oigle?
Thank you very much, Chair. So my comments are pretty much in line with Councillor Bell's. I don't feel that we should have a designated visitor center and that we shouldn't be hooking up with Mahone Bay or the town of Lunenburg. I think that it isn't going to serve our purposes. I do feel that we should improve our online tourism presence. And since we only have a few brochures that you mentioned tell about our trails and our parks, I'd like to see an added brochure that highlights the various communities that we have in the municipality, that are beautiful communities with their beaches and the lakes. But I'd also am thinking that with a possibility of a minimal cost, that we could probably leave these brochures at the gas stations that are along the highway or the restaurants and the various businesses that may even be mentioned in those brochures. And that's what I'm thinking.
Thanks, Councillor Oikle. So we do already distribute to a lot of gas stations and stores in the area. I won't say that we get to every single location, but that's some great insight, and we can look at exploring options for other brochures, like you suggested, highlighting the communities. Our communities are located on our Lunenburg region map, and I can definitely provide you with the brochures that we currently have, and I welcome any input for suggestions on how to improve those.
Councillor Greek, then Councillor Statton, Councillor Moore, and Councillor Haysom. So, Councillor Greek.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Hubley. My thoughts aren't in line with Councillor Bell and Councillor Oikle, and I travel differently than Councillor Bell. My trips usually spur the moment, and at times are based on flip of a coin. And if I end up in a spot where there is a VIC or any kind of tourist bureau, I stop. I like to see what's in the area. I like to talk to people. So from my understanding of the presentation, $18,000 buys us presence online and sending our brochures out to different areas of the province. So we're drawing people in. So once people or visitors or tourists arrive, there's nobody to talk to because we're online only, and they see how pathetic our cell phone service is. So still no one to call, nothing to look up. $16,000 in partnership with Mahone Bay gets us in a well-established brick-and-mortar location that's been there my entire life. As far as I remember, that tourist bureau has been there in Mahone Bay. And it gets someone out to events with the mobile kiosk when there's an event, say, the sandcastle building competition at Rissers. That seems well worth it to me, $16,000 to get that for our businesses. Plus, it offers student jobs, correct? The student positions would still be available?
That is correct. So we factor in that, like, this upcoming year, we still applied for Canada Summer Jobs Grant. So there would still be student positions in each of those locations, Lunenburg and Mahone Bay, as well as our mobile kiosks. So there's student positions there, but also permanent non-student positions or seasonal full-time non-student positions.
Okay. I really like the idea of partnering with Mahone Bay for the fact that it's been there for so long. Those who like the paper copies, it's there, and we're still getting out at events. And $16,000 for the season seems very reasonable to me.
Councillor Statton.
Thank you. I would like to see us try a different approach to our tourism as to what we're doing. And one of the things, we're putting up a bunch of new signs, and we don't have our web address on those signs. There's nothing there to say if you have, you know, www.modl.ca. It could easily be put on those new signs that are going up everywhere in entrance to our parks and all that stuff, it might be a possibility, too, to put up a couple kiosks with brochures on the entrance to some of the parks that are better used or more, busy at certain times of the year, that maybe a brochure telling them where restaurants are. Get some of the restaurants to give you some of their printed material and stick in these kiosks. It might, wineries, that kind of thing. It might encourage people to take a little side trip or to do something like that. I'm not certain that partnering with the other two tours bureaus are in our best interest right at the moment. We need to try something else before we go that route, because once you get in there, you tend to be established, and then you don't want to make changes. Or if we tried something else and then went that route, it might be more beneficial to us. But I'm not quite as prepared as Martin when I travel, but I do search a little bit about where I'm going, so I have some idea what I want. And I think most people do that. But I think we need to look at a better way to advertise the municipality than what we're doing. And I think that the website is one thing, and a couple of kiosks, maybe some pop-ups at a beach or an event or something when it's real busy might help us a lot.
Councillor Moore.
I'm not willing to go in a partnership with two other towns. We've done that with the town of Bridgewater, and I'll leave it go with that. But I am also not willing to keep that BIC going also with the cost of what it costs to keep it running and staff it for the amount of people that's going in and the decline in the amount of people that's going in. I like the kiosks. Things. I like the pop-up mm-hmm. ones. I think we can do better with our kiosks that we have out there and add other ones with brochures and wherever that is, parks or whatever. I feel as though if we go in a partnership, and I have nothing against the town of Lunenburg or the town of Mahone Bay, I love them both, but the fact is, will the employees that we hire, will they be specifically for the whole area or just specifically to promote outside of the towns? The reason I'm getting at that is because when we have events, like we just had a major event last summer called Tallermania, they came from all over the world, hundreds of people, and little old Conrad Road up close to Stanburn. Yep. It was unbelievable where they came from. Stayed in hotels, yep. But their biggest thing when that was over was they wanted to go to Lunenburg and they wanted to go to Mahone Bay. They wanted the culinary experience of that and everything. So I'm not quite sure partnering with Lunenburg and Mahone Bay tourism is going to bring it this way. I think they're already established. Their tourism marketing and stuff is out there. I think we need to do more of that on our own.
Councillor Haysom? That makes
sense. Thank you. My questions were already answered.
Oh, wonderful. Mayor Bellavergetson?
So I'm looking at the, the choices that's before us, and I thought there was four, and I'm seeing three potential motions here, and I had wrote no down for all of them, for the fourth one, too. But I'm looking at that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommends to Municipal Council to provide direction to staff to prepare a budget according for the upcoming fiscal year to create improvements to the municipality's online tourism presence. But I think that it could be expanded to be a bit more than that as well with the kiosks. It would have been great to see a kiosk up at the Tolomania or at some of these other events that are going on throughout the municipality. So I'm not sure that there is a motion there that really captures what I'm hearing around the table. So I think it does need to be expanded on somewhat. It's not only the online presence that we've been talking about. It's having that presence out in maybe the private business sector, wherever. So.
Go ahead, Judy.
Yeah, I'm trying to not say too much and let Ruth lead this.
The reason why we were recommending what we were recommending is that we really have 3 months before we're into the new tourism season. So we were really trying to look at a hybrid so that we could have some really good strategic direction moving forward, whether that was actually in a physical site or not. And that is why we were looking at that hybrid, because I'm hearing new brochures, I'm hearing new website, and that takes time to develop. So I'm not convinced that we could do that by April or May. So that is why, in my opinion, if we don't go with the partnership, I would probably recommend that we do the 7-month extension, get our act together around the tourism presence and the kiosks, blend those two, and then we have a better strategy coming out of that. And I guess that's why we were recommending those two sites are already there. They're well established. Part of our rationale, was that we had received 5,000. They're receiving over 20,000. So by being in these, two sites, you're actually hitting more people than we were hitting at our own blockhouse site. So I just want to give a little bit more, rationale as to why these motions are before you, and some of the time constraints from a staff perspective. So I just want to raise that. That's all.
Councillor DeLong.
Thank you. Yes. Having heard what you just said about that, I agree that we should not be renewing the lease on the current VIC. It's costly, and I don't think we're getting much benefit from it. I do like the idea of partnership, for many of the reasons that have been highlighted today, including that I don't think that we can draw people away from the towns. I think the towns are what draw people to the area. So why not partner with them? Why not work together? They already have very established tourism routes into their areas, so we may as well be part of that. And I definitely do think that we need a better online presence, and as you say, that takes time to develop.
Okay, we have Councillor Vino.
I don't think I'm in favor of partnering with either of the towns. I don't think we're going to get what we think we're going to get from it. We'll be at the bottom of the totem pole with that, just having some experience with tourism. I'm not sure who said it, but I love the idea of expanding on the wayfinding with those kiosks and parks and maybe having spots to put stuff. And about even the website, but a scan here for more of our parks, those black things that you can use in the places we do have cell phone service. It would be nice to have that. Another, I realize that we're running close to tourism season, but rather than just to say we did something, I'd sooner do it right. And if it means not having a tourism presence this summer, but knowing that we put those funds into our website or Wayfinding Part 2 or tourism presence, I think that would be good. And while we're on the topic, I get asked all the time for a brochure on our swim spots, all of our beaches, all of our lakes, and get asked for that quite a bit. So I just want to throw that in while I have the mic. But I'm not in favor of just spending money for the sake of spending it. I'd sooner have it go towards something long-term, and that also means not renewing the lease at the VIC. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, I would agree wholeheartedly with what Councillor Vino has just said. I think it was Councillor Statton, maybe I'm wrong, who said that once you establish, or maybe it was Councillor Moore here, a relationship with the towns of Mahone Bay or Lunenburg, it sets up that dependency that you're going to be there year after year. And I really don't think that the benefit is there, the same as the benefit is not there to our current location. If our current location is wrong in our own municipality, what would make it right in the center of Mahone Bay or Lunenburg? I think that we do need our presence there somehow to have our brochures somewhere, but I still think that we can do that in other manners. I would rather do it right, I guess. I don't think that just do it because we need to bridge the gap is the right way forward.
Councillor Bell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems like the first two policies have a number of people who are not totally supporting that. But would there be any appetite to make a grant to the Mahone Bay Tourism and the Lunenburg Tourism, a one-year grant this coming budget year, as a matter of good faith, but put the majority of our money in the third policy here and make an effort to develop and create improvements. And we might be able to add a section to our wayfinding signs, like the whole brochures or something. I just see the first two items more of a waste of money, but I'm trying to keep that good faith part of maybe extending the two groups $1,000 or something. I'm sure that they would be appreciative of it and maybe more willing to carry some of our brochures. But I would rather see us spend the bulk of our money ourselves developing what we can.
Okay, so I want to weigh in here. I think to miss a season and not be out there is a mistake. I think any way we can promote our local business or our parks or something like that, I do agree that we need to be online and we need to focus online. But I also think that when you take a look at Mahone Bay, it's all about their location, and we could reach so many more people in Mahone Bay that would direct them to the municipality that we'll never reach anywhere else. So, with that, let's try to bring all these thoughts together. Yeah. Where are we? Oh, Alex, go ahead.
So it might be helpful to remember that part of this came about because other units have done evaluations, most particularly Bridgewater, who was our financial partner. So they pulled out. So no matter what, if we were going to maintain the VIC, our costs were going to double. And we were already having trouble justifying the dollar value per visitor that was coming through the door. So your rec and tourism staff gave you some options. You asked for more information, and we've come back. This is what a partnership would look like. It sounds like that's not meeting council's expectation. I think you're right to be skeptical of our ability to extract the value that we would hope out of those partnerships. So if there is a desire to be conscientious about your dollar spend, then I would suggest you might want to do something like just add the word mobile to the last one there, so that you're going to create improvements to your online tourism presence and your mobile tourism presence. So you could do kiosks. You would still have some staff dedicated to supporting tourism, but you wouldn't have to be renting the place out in Blockhouse, and you wouldn't be handing over all that cash to those other partners. There's still the possibility that those partnerships exist, but it's not in the form of a handover of cash. So I think that might get you where the discussion has gone today, although it does not address the folks that continue to want the Blockhouse item there. So it's a halfway measure.
So that would be that we would not renew the lease at the...
Right.
Okay. I do have one other question, Alex, that you might be able to answer. So do we have permission to go into Mahone Bay with our kiosk? Like if there was, I don't know, the whatever festival they have, even the... Yeah. Yeah. Can we say, or do we have that permission?
So
I will. Thank you, Ruth.
We've had conversations with the Mahone Bay Tourism Chamber of Commerce, who operates the VIC, and the representative who I was talking to was excited at the idea of us coming into the town and promoting our area and the town of Mahone Bay. So they were welcoming the idea, and they oversee a lot of the Scarecrow Festival. So I foresee it being an option to go into the town, as well as the town of Lunenburg when they're hosting their events.
Okay, so I need some clarification here. Do we need the first motion that says we're not going to renew the lease, correct? The first motion?
Yeah.
And, okay. All right, let's start there. Good idea, Tom. Okay. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I just want to point out with the last motion, and Alex raised a good point, if we do mobile kiosks, there'd still be staffing costs. So Ruth has not included that in her website and her online presence costs. So I we'd have to go back and, like my GPS says, recalculate.
Okay. Councillor Oikle.
In my agenda, it does have here cost of online tourism presence, improvements, and modal kiosks. And it says the website, brand design, mobile kiosks, 10-foot tent, and the total cost is $18,000. It's on page 34 of 65 of the agenda.
So that's correct. That's an isolated cost for those specific improvements, but not for staffing costs. So this year, for example, our staffing cost was $33,000 for a seasonal VIC manager and two full-time travel counselors. So it would be approximately $35,000 if we're going to staff independent of these partnership options. If we're continuing to carry our own staffing costs, it would be approximately $35,000.
Okay, I think we're ready to put the first motion on the floor.
One question, please.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so on page 35, maybe Wendy said this, but anyway, I'm trying to figure out if we do go for an extra 7 months because we are so close to tourism season, the $56,830, is that staffing and everything? That's staffing, that's rent, that's...
Yes, so that's... That includes everything. That's the specific breakdown is earlier in the slides, but that includes staffing, rent, cost for supplies, landscaping. It doesn't include plowing because we wouldn't be operational over the.
You never know with this weather.
You never know.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, with that said, are we ready to put the first motion on the floor?
Sure.
Excellent. I'll ask Councillor Bell to put that motion.
To the Chair and members of the Policy Strategy Committee.
To the Policy Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy Strategy Committee recommend the Municipal Council to provide written notice to the municipality of the district of Lunenburg will not be renewing the lease on the Visitor Information Center located at 125 Cornwall Road, Blockhouse, Nova Scotia, when it expires on April 30th, 2023. I so move.
Seconded. Mayor Balabergetson. Is there any further discussion on the motion?
Question?
All those in favor?
Motion
passed unanimously.
I need food.
So I'm understanding that we're going to move down to the third motion on the sheet, and we'll add where it says
online
for the...
tourism, presence. Online and mobile tourism presence.
Okay. Did you have your mic on?
Sorry, no. We're suggesting that you add at the tail end of it improvements to the municipality's online and mobile tourism presence.
Excellent. Councillor DeLong, are you prepared to move that?
Certainly. Thank you. To the Chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommend to Municipal Council to provide direction to staff to prepare a budget accordingly for the upcoming fiscal year to create improvements to the municipality's online and mobile tourism presence. Do I have that right? And I so move.
Second. Councillor Moore. All those in favor. Further discussion on the motion. Councillor Greek.
Thank you. I will be voting in favor of this, but I just want it down that I would much prefer the brick and mortar location along with the mobile.
Excellent. Thank you. All those in favor? Motion passed unanimously. Okay, so we move down to mayors, deputy mayors, councillor update. We're going to skip that. Okay.
That shouldn't be on here.
Oh, I wondered that. I wondered if it was supposed to. Okay. So next meeting, February 21st, 2023 at 9 a.m. Go ahead, Councillor Hayes.
Sorry, I'm just confused why the second motion wasn't put on the floor. I don't understand why that wouldn't be put on the floor, because nothing that we voted on precluded also that having that as an option, correct? So we have indicated that we feel that we should work on our online tourism presence and our mobile tourism presence, and we all are in agreement about that, but we didn't have the vote on whether or not we move forward with a bricks and mortar location. Some people have expressed in support of that, and some people have not. So I'm just curious as to why we are not voting on that.
I think that was maybe a bit of eagerness on my part. It sounded like there was some consensus around where council wanted to go, but that certainly doesn't preclude that motion from coming to the floor. So if there's a member here that's interested in it, you absolutely can move it, and if you get a seconder, you can vote on it.
Councillor Hasten, are you interested in putting the motion on the floor?
Not necessarily. I'm just sort of surprised that after all of this discussion that we didn't vote on it, because it was definitely an option that's been put forward, and I think that there are some relevant points about it. I don't know how I will vote on it, but I was looking forward to maybe having an opportunity to do so. We've sort of highlighted our director of recreation has highlighted the fact that we are about to miss out on a tourism season by not having, you know, that there is work that has to go into this process of developing an online presence and mobile kiosks and what have you. What did I miss?
We're going to let our director of recreation answer, Trudy Payne.
The reason why I would support that the motions go on board is because we've had discussions with the town of Mahone Bay, we've had discussions with the town of Lunenburg, and they are going to want a response. And it probably would be appropriate for us to put the motion, even if it gets denied, then at least as staff we can go back and say that it was brought up, there was a motion, and this is what council decided.
Okay. With that, Councillor Hasem, would you like to put the motion on the floor?
Sure. To the chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommend to Municipal Council to develop partnerships with the Mahone Bay Tourism and Chamber of Commerce and Lunenburg Board of Trade to include the municipality of the District of Lunenburg within their tourism operations, and I so move.
Okay, do we have a seconder? Councillor DeLong. Is there discussion on the motion?
Thank you.
Councillor Hasem, go ahead.
Thank you so much. So I guess if we just look at what some of these costs would be comparatively, we've said that the cost of having both the Mahone Bay and Lunenburg locations would be $38,800. Obviously a savings compared to extending the lease, which we have already agreed not to do. We've talked about a budget of approximately $38,000 to develop a better online presence and mobile kiosks. That doesn't include staffing of kiosks, correct? That would be an additional 35 approximately. So I just wonder what it would look like if we pay for all of these things in 1 year, recognizing that we are sort of covering all our bases in terms of promotion of the area, recognizing that we likely wouldn't continue with those locations in Mahone Bay and Lunenburg because we would have concurrently developed our online presence. Is that correct to assume that would be what we would do if we – was that – okay, let me phrase that differently. Was that your intention by putting these three motions together, that we would concurrently develop our new strategy while also having a bricks and mortar location in Lunenburg and Mahone Bay?
That was where the recommendations came from. You're absolutely right. One of the things I would like to point out is that for our marketing, we already have $24,000 in our budget, so it would be an increase of $14,000. So I don't want to get it confused that it would be an increase of $38,000. It would be an increase of $14,000. And that was the idea with the hybrid, because you'd still have the bricks and mortar. You'd be saving, I can't remember the difference, about $18,000, why staff were working on increasing that online presence and website so that we would be moving more towards the online. That was the intent of the recommendation, yes.
So basically the savings that would come from not having that lease and moving forward with Mahone Bay and Lunenburg would more than pay for the increase in funding for developing a new strategy. So if we include in that new strategy, as we have with that third motion, to say that it is going to include mobile kiosks, what we would be potentially looking at is another dollar figure amount for staffing those kiosks if those things were to happen concurrently, to have both options.
So if we had both options, and Ruth, you can step in at any time, we would have the staff to handle the one kiosk that we were proposing. What I heard around the table when there was debate was that if we went completely on the online version, we would be needing to include online costs, on staffing costs, and look at increasing the number of mobile kiosks so that we could have staff out there in a more virtual, not a virtual, in a more physical presence at the space where tourists are.
The Mahone Bay partnership includes the cost to have somebody that's flexible to work the mobile kiosks, while the Lunenburg Board of Trade partnership wasn't factored into that. So that's where we have the staff availability. Mahone Bay thought that they would need an extra staff member, and that would enable us to have the flexibility to have them work the mobile kiosks.
Councillor Statton.
Thank you. I appreciate all the work staff has done with this, but I think we're premature to enter into an agreement with Lunenburg Mahone Bay without exploring everything else that we as a rural municipality, and we are that except for this area, without exploring what we can do in those municipalities, parks, and whatever public venue we have to promote tourism. So I won't be supporting it now. I'm not saying I won't later, once we've done all we can do in another manner.
Thank you. Councillor Bell?
Thank you. I'll vote against this consideration. I think that if we take the easy way out, it will be less incentive for us to develop our own strategies and could be just as expensive. And I can assure you that once you enter into it for 1 year, you'll be there for several years. There will be no incentive for you to develop your own mobile kiosks or other things that we talked about. And I don't want to fall into a trap where we don't take the opportunity to explore our own opportunities.
Thank you. So we have Councillor Vino, then Councillor Haysom, then Councillor Oikel.
Thank you. We currently get a grant from TIE-INS, which is the Tourism Industry Association of Nova Scotia and Canada Summer Job Grants. If there was enough people voting in favor of this, would we lose both of those because we're going under another umbrella, such as Town of Lunenburg and Town of Mahone Bay? And second part to that, can we use the funds from TIE-INS towards some refresh ideas, or is it just for VICs?
No, that's a great question. So the tie-ins funding we receive offsets the cost of our brick and mortar VIC. We would still have availability to those funds if we opt to go with a mobile kiosk option because Chester, for example, they have primarily mobile kiosks and tourism ambassadors within their businesses, and they still receive the funding. I wouldn't think that we would be able to receive those funds if we were only in Mahone Bay VIC where they already received those funds, or the Lunenburg VIC because they already received tie-ins funding as well.
Would that also, sorry, supplementary, would that also apply to the Canada Summer Jobs where you generally apply for your own business organization entity?
We were going to reach out after, so we've already submitted our Canada Summer Jobs applications for the summer for two students, so we would have to revisit that if we were in Mahone Bay and or Lunenburg, because they also received that funding. We believe that if we have the mobile kiosk, the CSJ grants will still be applicable. Like, if we operate with improvements to our online tourism presence and the mobile kiosk, we fully expect that we would still be able to use those grants. But we can't, we would have, MODL would have to be paying the students in order to receive that funding.
Councillor Haysom.
Thank you. This is all helpful and interesting, and I can't believe actually how much time we spent talking about this. But there's one thing that I do, I just feel like I really need to point this out, is that we have an area that is heavily reliant on tourism, and we have businesses that are heavily reliant on that tourism season. It is short, and for some of those businesses, those 4 months allow them to operate for the rest of the year. So I think that actually having that bricks and mortar space while we figure out what our next steps are and how to optimize our online reach is really important. And so actually, I've gone back and forth on this a number of times. I've sat here changing my mind, but I am going to vote in favor of the motion that I made.
Thank you, Councillor Hasem. Councillor Oikle.
Thank you, Chair. So in your previous presentation, you did mention that our brick-and-mortar facility, which was in Block House, was mostly helping people going to Mahone Bay and Lunenburg. So I don't foresee being in one of their brick-and-mortar facilities is going to change that at all. And so I will not be voting in favor of this.
Councillor DeLong.
Is there an option for us to enter into this as a pilot program? Could we state that we're interested in doing it for 1 year and then test the waters after that?
Yeah, absolutely. There would be that opportunity. Nothing's set in stone. We could approach them with any sort of negotiation, so I fully expect that they would be willing to enter into a one-year agreement.
Okay.
Mayor Bulliver-Getson.
There's nothing stopping us from entering into it for 1 year. There's nothing stopping us from doing it next year, if that's where staff feel we should go at that time. I still would like to see how we can promote our area within our own municipality to the full extent that we can do that. I agree with those speakers who said that once you commit, it's hard to back out. They become dependent on the funds that you're putting in there to do things. They upgrade the presence. There's two people there. There's whatever. I think that we're falsely misleading them and even attempting to go in there if that's not where we think that we will get the biggest bang for our buck and where the direction will be. I see New Germany. I see Blue Rock. I see these areas being more beneficial to us. I question why we're hung up on this to the extent that we are.
Okay, is there further discussion?
Question.
Perfect. All those in favor? Okay. All those against? So keep your hand up if you're against. Councillor Bell, Councillor Oikle, Mayor Bulliver-Getson, Councillor Moore, Councillor Vino, Councillor Wynott, Councillor DeLong, Councillor Statton, and myself, Deputy Mayor Hubling. Excellent. So... Oh, sorry. Motion is defeated. I forgot it. Okay, so our next meeting is February 21st, 2023 at 9 a.m. Motion for adjournment. Councillor Wynott, seconded by Councillor Bell. All those in favor? Excellent. We're adjourned. We do have a workshop following this.